Let's move on to the regular agenda, please.
Item 1155, accept a grant in the amount of $699,464 and appropriate $300,000 for fiscal year 2014-15 from the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, fiscal year 2013 Smart Policing Initiative Program to fund, in partnership with a research partner, the evaluation of the impact of patrol frequency and patrol timing on crime and service calls to support improving the efficiency of patrol methods.
Great. Captain Marshman, Sergeant Stewart, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor. Commissioners, thank you. That was a long sentence explanation to essentially describe what's academically known across the country in Western policing as hotspots policing, which with Commissioner Novick, when you brought in researcher Cody Tellup, it's from that point forward. So what the Police Bureau did is we customized a little bit, and instead of doing traditional hotspots policing, which is done a little bit differently in cities across the country, we did ours, what you've heard as NILOC. NILOC stands for Neighborhood Involvement Locations. And I'll let Sergeant Stewart get into the nuts and bolts if that's needed. But what we did is we mapped out the city of Portland in crime locations and had officers respond to those areas. The twist, though, is on this is it's been proven academically that if you put officers in these areas, you likely will reduce crime. We have large amounts of data because we sent officers out in these areas over the course of the summer. What we'd like to do is have researchers come in and finish that analysis. One thing that hasn't been done in the United States, and I would love for Portland to be the leader in this, is to test or see what the impact for police legitimacy and procedural justice is with the community. Agencies that have done this and shown to reduce crime, in my opinion, they haven't gone far enough and tested what's the outcome of that crime reduction strategy. Did you help or hurt police community relations? And I think we've seen in some cities across the country where they have had positive crime reduction outcomes, but to the detriment of police community relations. It would be nice to accept this grant, in my opinion, to measure that and to see the impact on a community. Because my personal thought is I would like to tweak this a little bit differently. Instead of sending officers into these areas to reduce crime and have a tangential impact, positive impact of enhancing police community relations, we flipped it differently. Of the items that we want our officers to focus on, we said focus on police community relations with the side benefit of actually reducing crime. I would rather have it that way, and I think, I don't want to get ahead of my skis here with some of the analysis we've done, but I think we got that far. But this grant will help us, through our researchers, contribute to that body of knowledge, and hopefully in a very successful way of showing that by enhancing police community relations, you can actually reduce crime. Hopefully I said that succinctly enough for you today. Any technical follow-up, Greg?
Yeah, just a couple items. You know, on that note, there's been a lot of academic research into whether hotspots policing is effective. It is effective. The big missing element, and Dr. Dennis Rosenbaum, who I think many of you are familiar with, are among the academics who brought this up, is that we might be trading short-term crime reduction for long-term damages to police legitimacy. If you read the initial grant, it was very much focused on a traditional hotspot policing approach. However, there were significant community concerns about that approach, and I think those concerns were legitimate. We tried to listen to those community concerns and take the good that we could do in terms of the crime prevention, but really morph it into an approach that's more consistent with both the citizens' desires of the police in Portland and our needs as an organization to improve our legitimacy. We had the research backed by Portland State that showed that when officers interacted with the public and the public perceived those interactions as being fair, they tended to rate us more highly than members of the public who had no interaction. And we also knew that officers would spend significant time in these areas regardless of whether we instituted this program, because the natures of the areas were areas where we had high calls for service and a large amount of crime. Over the course of the summer, we attempted to dispatch about 15,000 of these calls, were successful in about 12,000 of them, and were able to get officers into these areas where And again, all very preliminary. It appears that they consistently did more positive community-type engagement than, say, if they were doing self-initiated activity, and consistently conducted much, much fewer stops in these areas, which was the goal of the program. And we hope we simultaneously reduced crime and have some surveys out to see if the public perceived the police better as a result of this intervention. This grant will largely fund that research that will allow us to know the effects of what we did, and it'll be conducted by Portland State, who's sort of independent research partners, so it won't be the police kind of telling the public, yay, we did a good job. There'll actually be some, it'll be academic oversight and peer-reviewed papers, and then the federal government will also be overseeing it. So we'd like this grant to help fund those studies. Before we go forward with the program in a more widespread manner.
Greg, and again, what you were doing was sending officers to specific locations, not in response to calls, but it was sort of treated as a call within the dispatch system, but you were scheduling visits to locations because they were locations associated with high crime, not because you got a particular call.
And you guys have heard it. The community wants police in these areas out of their calls. They want to know the police before the police take police action. I had a walking beat in Old Town is where I started my career. And police accountability is wonderful, but there is no bigger police accountability than you walk a walking beat every day and are accountable because of interpersonal relationships to the people in that area. You can't replicate that. And so the idea is if we're going to be going there a lot for crime, if we can go there before there's crime, maybe prevent some crime, maybe know the people in the area so that if we do go there and have to take care of a crime, they're more likely to talk to us. These are areas that by definition were at high risk for us to visit anyways. So we thought, let's get ahead of the curve and let's get out there and let's know the people in these areas in situations where we're not having to take enforcement action. We're hopeful it was successful. It was very difficult, and I don't want to come across and say that it was a big Shangri-La and everybody loved it. We dispatched thousands of calls at the busiest time of the year, and a number of them were canceled, and a number of officers felt really kind of pushed to the limit and weren't afraid to tell me of that. But they went there, and it appears that when you ask them to do this, they're professionals, and they went there and. Again, if we looked at there were thousands of comments, left in these calls, and some of them were kind of like, geez, I'm too busy to do this. But a lot of them were like, geez, I went out to the park and I was handing out stickers, or I visited the school, or I talked to some folks from the Somali community about the Portland Timbers. I mean, there was just a lot of great citizen police interaction that I think as we move forward, if we want to improve our relationships with the community, I think it's going to start from programs like this that create that interpersonal connection. And again, I think being able to study it in kind of a rigorous scientific manner so that it's going to increase the legitimacy of the program itself, because the public is going to trust, obviously, researchers more than police. It's our program. We're, of course, going to say it worked well, but let's work with the academics and find out if it really did work well.
Other questions? Thank you. I appreciate both the presentation and the thoughtfulness behind it. I think this is the right way to proceed in trying something new here and understanding that we have to do it in a way that having a third party watching how we do it is going to be helpful. So thanks for helping to spread that message. It's not always an easy message in any organization to hear that, hey, somebody's going to be watching your work. But in this case, it's really positive. Thanks. Thank you both. Okay, there
thank you very much.
Anyone signed up to speak on this item?
Yes, we have two people, Ben Pickering and Charles Johnson.
Okay, come on up. Mm-hmm. Come on up, Charles.
Ben, go ahead.
Can you speak first?
Sure. Go ahead, Charles.
Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, you've improved the microphones in the month that I've been gone. My name is Charles Johnson. It's nice to see almost $250,000 coming from the federal government and the Department of Justice, even as some of our relationships with the federal authorities and federal judges are still a little bit... We wouldn't say heated because I think we think this appeal is an academic issue, but I want to say that if we have almost $750,000 to talk about polite and safe policing, we need to also try and connect the dots and maybe come up with another $750,000 to talk about improving the police role related to deaths and suicide. When I was first, I think the last city council before I left for a month was, it came up that, you know, suicide is a leading cause of death in Portland. And although this particular study is limited to the issue of community policing, I think for the city council to best serve its citizens, when you're interfacing with the police and when we're talking about this, we always need to come back to that issue of if the police are part of public safety and public safety is about keeping citizens alive and healthy, we need to look at, you know, where the dollars and where police and other civic spending will do the most good. And so I hope that I'm very pleased to see I'll still call him Lieutenant Marshman for a while probably, but see him moving up and taking this overall comprehensive approach where it's not just about the quality of policing, but that the real purpose of the police is just to be a tool in making this a city where everybody, regardless of race or economic status, feels like a safe and valued participant in our great Portland society. So especially you, Mr. Mayor, since you have the closest oversight role for the police, I hope that in your ongoing conversations and when you talk informally with people at Portland State, that you'll always keep in mind that even though we're getting this nice $700,000 for a very specific and what seems to be a well-designed and well-intentioned study, that if we're putting $700,000 into a nice face on the police and we haven't found an equivalent or greater amount of money to talk about how the police are going to be helpful partners with Cascadia and others to keep our citizens alive, then we've really missed this. I do want to make a brief comment about hotspot policing. I don't know what the official policy is. My closest connection with past hotspot problems is when I'm over in the Lloyd and I walk past a place where there are bullet scars in brick walls from the place where Key Notice died. And also in the Lloyd, we had a veteran, a former United States military service person, who died via suicide from cop, basically. When you have a shotgun in a parking garage and the police come and shoot you, that's not really the kind of outcomes we want to have in Portland for our veterans. And so I hope that some of those concerns will be part of this study. Thank you.
I appreciate that. I just want to second some of your comments. You know, each of us gets to see our bureaus, you know, in their day-to-day operation. And because I'm police commissioner, I get these daily documents from the police bureau about what they're doing. And as it happens, last night's report that included seven, you know, significant incidents, somebody that had 2 pounds of methamphetamine, high-speed pursuit of a murder suspect and interrupting a fight. So it was a busy night, but to really corroborate what you said, one of those was a suicidal woman taken in on a police hold. Another was a man waving a knife in Pioneer Place. And a third was a woman who attempted to commit suicide by jumping onto Highway 26. I mean, 3 of the 7 events last night were suicides or attempted suicides. Fortunately, they were just attempted. But we lost 114 citizens to suicide last calendar year, which was many times the number of murders or even traffic deaths combined. So it's a significant issue, and it's because the police end up being the first responder to a lot of mental health situations that we're, you know, calling on our officers to help assist people at that really, you know, critical moment. So it's a key issue, and hotspot policing is really dealing with another set of crimes or another set of problems. But you're right, with one hand, we've got to be addressing that thoughtfully, and with another hand, we've got to do a lot better job on the mental health side.
Thank you for putting that in the record, Mayor, and I look forward to coming back with Sarah Hobbs and working with other citizens to get better networks so that we have a broad community base of support to get these issues better handled.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Ms. Pickering.
Benjamin H. Pickering. Walking through this, the police and the citizens things that we all live in this community, but it's like if we had some recreations more for like, I mean, more toward understanding the minds and the people, which is like, I mean, you have to start with something. Like people get addicted to things, and it's just like being and giving people something to be addicted to, which they're drawn in toward. The progress is what's going on with the cops and the people. Are the people are they well managed and have something to look forward to every day in the city, or are they, you know, grasp a hold of something that people are reaching out, you know. It'd be cool, you know, like I feel that I always hear these people come in here and there's different people and they speak for certain people, like certain speakers, but it'd be cool to hear from the people that are actually, you know, want to get it off their chest, or why can't they come and explain it themselves? But I don't know. I didn't have really much to talk about this one other than just, you know, we need a lot more guidance and a lot more leadership and love. Yeah. A lot more working skills all the way around. You know, everybody needs working skills. But thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, Council. Well, first of all, I like to sit around reading criminal justice.
Put your name into the record.
Oh, Mary Eng. I was reading a criminal justice book last winter, and one of the facts that startled me was that officers themselves often face higher rates of divorce and suicide and alcoholism. And I think in some ways we're talking a lot about the health and well-being of the community, but I think the officers themselves deserve an inclusivity with the community because they have one of the highest stress jobs in the world. And I have a lot of respect for that. I wanted to share with you my Professor Caballero down at Los Angeles City College in the Administration of Justice Department taught us patrol procedure, and he was wonderful and fabulous. And I think in some ways doing cross-cultural analyses can help us work on our weak spots and help with our growth towards sort of a comparative analysis and looking at good things that are happening down in Los Angeles, or another city which I spent some time in was London, where I observed a much more kind of like a security guard type presence in the city of London. That my friend who sort of mentored me helped me understand that because the high finance that occurs in the city of London is so high profile, the police there had a very strict code of manners and etiquette that, while maybe down in different bureaus there might be different kinds of problems with police brutality, that I was basically observing the police at their finest. And to me, it was a really beautiful experience because I was really dreadfully afraid of the police brutality that I expected to ensue around the Occupy era. So I kind of skipped out of town. But I think in some ways, looking at different modes of police decorum, we could look very much to the Swedish model, which has gender integration and gender equality as a mode of achieving peace and tranquility. And when I love seeing lady officers and I love sticking up for them, and I know sometimes they could be in very dangerous situations. And I think one thing that men in general or larger sized people need to know is that often size is a factor. If someone is a foot and a half taller than you, there's an intimidation factor. And even the nicest, okay, say like Stuart Palmiter, who testified for Benjamin Pickering. He's huge. He must be 7 feet tall. But he's an example of a good Samaritan officer who's approachable, who's honest, who his only commandment is honor. He's not sticking up for bad behavior. He doesn't have that thin blue line that Gregory Kufuri talk about talked about at the DOJ hearing, his only command is to do what's right in terms of somebody who's suffering. And to me, we need to really spotlight people like him and share that with the community so we can know who we can trust.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else?
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Then we need to take a roll call on this item because it's an emergency ordinance.
Novick?
I'm really excited about what the Bureau is doing here, both aspects of it, because it's absolutely true that research indicates that crime is spectacularly location-specific, and proactively having officers in 15-minute increments at random times at locations that have been shown to be high-crime locations does make a difference in preventing crime. But as we heard, I mean, there's a concern about you want to be sure that by focusing on these locations, you're not alienating the people that live in those locations. So the Bureau's emphasis on community relations and that being a primary, not a secondary part of the effort is extremely welcome. And obviously having the research to show whether it's working on both sides is critically important. So congratulations to the Bureau on what it's doing. Really appreciate it. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, this is a great grant, and I look forward to the research, and I want to thank Captain Marshman and Sergeant Stewart. I know Sergeant Stewart is always brings the utmost rigor to anything that is undertaken in the Police Bureau and making sure, and I appreciate the candor of your remarks, too, making sure that this works. And that's what this grant is all about, is really trying to see whether predictive policing has also a positive impact on our police community relations, too. And that's very of utmost importance these days. So thank you all, and pleased to accept this grant. Aye.
Hales.
Yeah, this is good work being done very thoughtfully. Thank you. Aye. Okay.